You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 14th, 2017, and episode number 302. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, happy Valentine's Day to everybody out there. And what a better way to spend your holiday than here with me listening to the Paranormal News Insider. It's a match made in heaven here. It's great. Well, not a huge Valentine's Day fan. To me, it's just a kind of a greeting card holiday. And I'm sure you've probably read about the history of Valentine's Day and some of the creepy stuff that it's associated with, but we're not going to talk about that. Tonight, we're going to talk about Bigfoot and the Boogeyman. Well, unfortunately, they're off limits in New Mexico. We're also going to talk some numerous sightings of the Loch Ness Monster. What's going on over there? And rare animal items for sale. It's nearly $100,000. What could that possibly be? And do you believe? We're going to find out if you really do tonight. We're also going to have Darby Wales. And we'll also have the book of the week, conferences, conventions, and a whole lot more. Lots of love in the air tonight. Well, this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is actually the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics, to quantum physics, to cosmology, and psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical, is simply a term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. It's a fantastic school. And let's see, anomalous notes. Well, the events listing, it's ongoing. At ParanewsInsider.com, you can check out the events that I have currently. And again, it's always updating. I'm always adding stuff. And I've already crossed off a couple already for this year, which is weird. It's only the middle of February here. But stuff is coming up fast. So if you want to get out there and you want to see this stuff, which I highly recommend, you better get your tickets quickly for all these events. They're coming up fast. I mean, spring is right around the corner. I don't know. Might be here right now. It's kind of warm today here in Ohio. I don't know about you where you're at. I know some people are still kind of digging out from the snow out there, and I'm sure we'll get another bout here in Ohio. But spring is coming, and that's when these events start to pop out of the ground and flourish like little flowers. And you're going to want to get there because I know you. I know you want to get there. I know you want to see these things. I know you want to get out there and enjoy this stuff. And if you have any information about any event that I don't have it on my list and you want to hear it here on the show, let me know. Insider at ParanewsInsider.com. Or better yet, just invite me to it. Then I'll really talk about it, like the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. I'm going to keep talking about it. Even after it's over, I'm still going to talk about it. May 5th through the 7th, 2017. Farmington, Pennsylvania. Be there. Bring a tent. I'll be speaking. Steve Coles will be back again. Stan Gordon will also be there again for the second year in a row. And Jay Baitrochin, he was there last year. He didn't get a chance to speak He and I spent probably half a Sunday talking about stuff, but he's going to be speaking. Looking forward to his presentation. He's also the one that designs all the stuff on the website, all the little cool little posters and stuff, and even the T-shirt that I already got. I'm wearing it right now. Actually, no, I'm not. I'm not going to lie to you. You wouldn't know if I was anyway, but I do have it. Let's see. Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She was just added a couple of weeks ago. Ronald L. Murphy, who has written a ton of books. He's like, wow, he's got a lot of great stuff. He's the one that he has all the On books, On Dogman, On Wild Man. He's even got On Mermaids, On Ghosts. It goes on and on. Okay, that was bad. Trapper John Tice from Mountain Monsters. He was there last year. He's going to be back again. Rumor has it he may bring some more of the cast, but I'm not saying that's going to happen. Just saying it's a rumor. And just announced this week, or I guess it was last week, Alexander Petikov will be presenting Sasquatch Out of the Woods, a documentary during the event. There's probably going to be quite a few of those, actually. We had a couple last year that were really, really good. Kept a lot of people on, glued to their chairs, their little camp chairs. Now, tickets are already on sale for this event. And if you haven't got it, here's another great incentive to get your tickets for the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. There's a big contest, a big giveaway, and anyone who buys a ticket in advance, including those who have already bought a ticket, will be put into this drawing. Now, you must purchase a two-day pass with the cookout, a Saturday-only pass with the cookout, or a Sunday-only pass. One ticket equals one entry into the contest. The drawing will take place during the 2017 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, and the winner must be present to collect his or her prize, or I'm taking it home myself. Well, that last part's not true. Well, maybe, I don't know. The more tickets you buy, the more chances you have to win. The contest does not apply to anyone buying a ticket at the door. So you got to buy it in advance. That's the hint here. Buy your tickets now. So what's in this big prize package? Well, I think they added something to it. But so far, what I know is a 2017 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure T-shirt, which is awesome, by the way. Thank you, Jay. A 2017 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure 11x17 poster, which I will be happy to sign. A 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure 11x17 poster, which I will also sign. A Bigfoot Crossing sign, a bottle of Squatch Sauce Marinade, sauce compliments of Sasquatch sauce, a limited frame digital art print design and created by Jay Baterton and Chum Bucket Studios. You also get a replica copy of a Pennsylvania Bigfoot cast of Bigfoot. A Boggy Creek Monster T-shirt donated by Small Town Monsters, and a Boggy Creek Monster DVD donated by Small Town Monsters. That also reminds me, I keep forgetting to talk about this. John Sable Jr. will be on hand as well. He's going to be speaking. I don't know why I'm going to write his name in here because I keep forgetting to talk about that. John will be talking about his experience around the time when the Boggy Creek Monster was going on. He was there. So he's going to be sharing some of his experiences with that event as well at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Oh, wait. Oh, big news here. Also, just announced last night. I almost forgot about this. Two new additions to the conference. I know one of them was he was there last year from the UFO Research Center of Pennsylvania, Butch Witkowski. He was there last year. He and I talked shop for quite a while as we were setting up, I believe, on Saturday morning. And he hung around during the day. Well, now he's officially there. He's going to be talking to people about UFO sightings and a lot of the other stuff he's involved with. That's a great addition. And also from Phantoms and Monsters, Lon Strickler will also be on hand to talk to attendees. This, my goodness, if you're anywhere near Pennsylvania, I don't care where you're at, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio. I don't care if you're in Florida. You got to get there. This is going to be an adventure of a lifetime. Well, that's what they bill it as. But you know me, I say the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It will be intense. That's because we're going to be camping out in tents. So bring your tent and bring your appetite. Big cookout. There's going to be people, not just speakers, but also some workshops, some hands-on stuff. We'll take you out in the woods and, well, okay, I better slow down. We're going to take you out in groups out into the woods and demonstrate to you how we approach Bigfooting, I guess. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people had a ton of fun last year, and everyone was hoping that we would do this again. And Eric Altman has done a heck of a job so far, and I'm looking forward to this event. See, if you invite me to something, I talk about it for 20 minutes. A new event listed on the Paranormal News Insider events page. Now, I have different segments. I have at the paranormalnewsinsider.com site, you click on the events tab at the top. I have a couple of different sections: ghost conferences, conventions, which is a majority of these conventions. I also have UFO events as well as cryptozoology events. And I put them in those three depending upon which one they have the majority of their stuff for. And some of them have a lot more than that. So some of these events may be under the ghost conference, but they may have some UFO attendees. But that's why I put this stuff there. You can click on the link and look for yourself. Now, above all that, on that site, on the events page, I have paranormal classes, tours, and guided hunts. Now, I don't do anything that's usually repetitive because otherwise it gets stale. I like stuff that updates. There's some stuff on there for the HDH Institute and Rhine Research Center that Lloyd Auerbach is doing, some parapsychology classes, some really wonderful information if you're looking for anything about parapsychology. But just added is Ghost City Tours. They're sponsoring an overnight ghost hunt at the Andrew Jackson Hotel in New Orleans, Louisiana. Your purchase price includes your own room for two adults, entry into the ghost hunt for said adults, the use of Ghost City Tours investigation equipment, and the opportunity to take home your digital audio recordings. That's a pretty good bargain. There are dates for, let's see, Monday, April 24th, 2017, and or Tuesday, April 25th. You can go back to back if you want to do it, as well as October 11th and or October 12th, 2017. Visit ghostcitytours.com for more details. They also have some other cities that they're getting ready to do as well. And that's your anomalous notes for this week. And we're going to jump into the news here. Why not? Enough playing around. Let's get into some cryptid news. I got some love this week for the Loch Ness Monster. Every time I think this thing is going to go away, or people are going to say, you know what, I don't think there's really anything there, he pops back up, or she pops back. I don't know what she is, or if it is. I don't know. We don't know. Nobody really knows what this thing is. But, the Loch Ness Monster, really interesting stuff here. The Loch Ness Monster has officially started the year. It's cold up there. Again, I don't know if it's a him or a her, but the 2017 campaign for sightings has officially begun in Scotland. On Sunday, February 5th, an unnamed witness claims he saw a series of bubbles rise from the loch while at a pier by the foyer's power station. The bubbles went into the direction of where he had seen fish jumping out of the water and continued to about 200 meters, or that's about 650 feet to you and I, away from him. It's pretty far. And that's it. I know that's not very exciting. It's kind of anticlimactic, but no pictures, no like fins, no head, no excitement, nothing. That's it. Just bubbles. Bubbles. I don't know. I've seen a lot of bubbles in the water, not from me, but just from, I don't know what, fish or methane. I don't know what it was. But to assume it's a Loch Ness Monster, kind of weird. But I don't know. It's an official sighting. So take it as it is. I don't know. I don't write the stuff. I just report it. And I'm going to throw that link in the chat room. If you're in the chat room, well, welcome to the chat room. If you're not in the chat room, well, shame on you. Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe you're listening to this as a recording, as a podcast. That's fine. I get it. It's Valentine's Day night. You might be out at dinner. I don't know. You might be doing other things that people do on Valentine's as couples. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to look. Do what you got to do. But thank you for listening. If you're listening, if you're not listening, well, you wouldn't have heard me say that anyway. So anyway, more Loch Ness Monster news. This one is it was a little weird. It caught me kind of caught me off guard. I had to actually look at the date, and I realized that this is an old story. I don't know why it popped up, though. It popped up in some of the new news. The Scottish Sun reports that two witnesses saw the Loch Ness Monster last year at the same time. Two separate people in separate areas saw the Loch Ness Monster at the same time. That's never happened before. That's unprecedented. Tourist Kevin Smith saw three large dark shapes in the water and was able to take a photograph with his phone at around 3:34 p.m. on August 21st, 2016. Now, at the same exact time, give or take a minute, I don't know, around 12 miles away, Ian Campbell was able to photograph what looked like two creatures swimming in the loch nearly side by side. Well, the headline of the story reads, "There's two of them, Loch Ness Monster spotted in two places at once for the first time ever." But I fail to see the Loch Ness Monster in either one of these photographs. I mean, not to be skeptical. I just see some waves. Both could be anything from seals to fish. And if there were two of something swimming together in the one sighting and another creature seen 12 miles away at the same time, wouldn't there actually be three Loch Ness Monsters? I don't know. Anyway, I'm not even sure why this is even news. Again, this is the story is dated from December 30th, 2016. So obviously not front page news either, because I don't remember hearing about this. But I thought it was interesting that there was two sightings at the same time. Weird. Again, I don't see that. And if you want to see that, I'm going to post that also in the chat room. So you're going to get a sneak peek at this. And these links I will divulge during the week through social media, typically Facebook. And if you follow me on Twitter, you'll also be able to pull up those links as well. And you can check them out. Check out these photographs for yourself and judge for yourself. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is something to that. Now we're going to move to the book of the week. The book of the week has to do with the Loch Ness Monster. Since we're giving some love to the Loch Ness Monster, and I just happen to have another book on the Loch Ness Monster up on my bookshelf. Kind of planned on having a different book, but it goes with the ghost theme. And we've kind of done ghost stuff for the last few weeks. I like to change it up every now and again, but I kind of wait and hope that something like this will happen where there's a bunch of stories about one particular topic. And there's even one story I didn't even talk about. My goodness, have you seen this story? Let me just mention this. Where's this at? Well, the guy that's been looking for the Loch Ness Monster for 25 years. My goodness, this guy, he sold his house. He quit his job and he bought a van and he just sits there in this parking lot and just he lives his life there. And he just like looks out and waits for the Loch Ness Monster. Now, according to the story, it's a video. I'll throw that in the link, the chat room here, too. It's pretty cool. So he's been watching for the Loch Ness Monster. I guess the first year that he was out there, he saw something that he thought was the Loch Ness Monster. And since then, for 24 years, he hasn't seen anything. My goodness. I guess that would be kind of cool. Let me throw that in there, too. And you can save that one, too. It's a pretty cool thing. Hopefully, I don't forget that. Let me throw the link in my show notes here so I don't forget that. But, I mean, my goodness. Like, what a lifestyle to spend your life, to spend your time nearly 24 hours a day just sitting there. Looking for him. And wow. And he only seen him once. I mean, my goodness, that's got to be yikes. Anyway, book of the week. These last couple stories lead us to the book of the week. And I did want to go back to cryptozoology. Don't have too many more cryptozoology books up on my shelf here. I've been doing this for 72 weeks or so that I've been doing the book of the week. I do have a lot of other technical manuals and things like that, but still trying to I don't know. I'm down to like the nitty gritty up there. Looks like I still got quite a few. I got a few other books that doing some research on that we'll talk about in the upcoming weeks. But anyway, this book this week is about the Loch Ness Monster, and it's kind of a short book, 128 pages, but it's a little bit more technical than your average book, even though it's on the Loch Ness Monster. It's not a whole lot of technical stuff to talk about with the Loch Ness Monster, and there's some unusual things in it that'll actually is going to expand the time it's going to take you to read and absorb this book. Now, this book was first published in the United Kingdom in 1986, but the U.S. version did not come out until 1997, which is the one I'm got right here. This book is simply titled, let's see, The Loch Ness Monster, The Evidence. That's it, The Loch Ness Monster, The Evidence. And I have the, there's a link for the book in the chat room. I don't know if this is going to work. Throw the cover up there. I usually do that. Dita usually does that. But Dita's got her hands, she's up to her neck in snow, I guess. So there it is. The Loch Ness Monster, The Evidence by Stuart Campbell. And I saw this book and I thought, I kind of rolled my eyes. I'm going to be honest with you. The Loch Ness Monster isn't really one of those creatures that is going to be discovered. I really don't have a very high opinion of the Loch Ness Monster. I know you like the Loch Ness Monster, and I get it. It's romantic. It's really nice to wish that these kind of creatures were to exist, but I don't hold a whole lot of stake in this. And when I first saw this book, I thought, oh boy. But then I read it. I flipped it over and I read it, and I thought, well, wow, this really appeals to me. It's kind of a little bit of a skeptical person. It's kind of a critical review of some of the most prolific evidence obtained of the Loch Ness Monster. The book is kind of structured. I mean, as you look through the chapters, it's pretty simple. It's defining the basic terms, and then it breaks down the evidence piece by piece, moving from the stories of witnesses to the photographs to the videos, above water stuff, and then to the sonar and underwater photographic evidence. It's pretty linear in how it goes through, but it's pretty dismissive of the idea of the Loch Ness Monster. But as I always say here on the show, it's easier to believe than it is to question. And, you know, you're here because you believe, or you want to believe, and I want to believe as well. But show me the evidence. Show me the data. Show me the data that makes up evidence. But there's not a whole lot here with the Loch Ness Monster. And Stuart Campbell does a pretty good job of disseminating all this information that's been presented about the Loch Ness Monster historically and currently. And he does a pretty good job of really disseminating everything. One of the confusing parts of the book, I have to mention, a lot of people pointed this out in the I was kind of reading through the Amazon comments because I thought it was a pretty good book. He uses the abbreviation N, the letter N, when talking about the Loch Ness Monster or Nessie. And he also uses L for the names of various lochs and lakes in Scotland. It's kind of confusing. He also uses some other letters in there to explain other things. And it is a little confusing, but if you know it maybe you're different than me, but when I read a book, I kind of hear words in my mind. Maybe I'm weird. Maybe I should be locked up. I don't know. Probably one of the many things that I should be locked up for. But my mind kind of fills it in. When I see the letter N, it just automatically says Nessie in my brain. So you kind of get used to it, and you mentally replace these abbreviations after just a couple of pages. It's actually kind of annoying, though. I don't know why I couldn't just write it out. I mean, geez, it's just a couple letters. Most of them on the left hand, and there's the I on the right hand. It wouldn't have taken that long to type it out. I mean, I don't know. You could even have copied and pasted it for all it mattered. I don't know. But this book cuts to the point. And though that point is there's honestly a very little in the way of legitimate physical evidence for the existence of the Loch Ness Monster, or really for any lake monster for that matter. It does kind of examine other lake monsters. It's a pretty good book. And if you like the Loch Ness Monster and you really believe in all this stuff, you might have a hard time getting through it because you're going to get a little upset. You're going to get a little mad because it is pretty skeptical and is pretty dismissive, but it raises some very good points. And for me, again, it's easy to believe, but it's hard to be critical sometimes of these things. So it's a good book to read if you're not sure, you're on the fence, you kind of think that the Loch Ness Monster might be real, but you're not sure, and you really want to read a little bit of the skeptical thing, which I highly recommend in any field you're in. If you're convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt and you have a little bit of doubt, to be somebody who's going to be a very knowledgeable researcher, you should always read the opposite side of your beliefs or your personal feelings about something. It will draw you toward the middle. It will also present the opposing argument to your beliefs. And trust me, it's a really smart method to do. And yeah, it is hard to read some of that sometimes because you do get a little frustrated. But it's what us smart people do. I'm smart, but I don't know. Sometimes I'm a smart ass, but that's different. And what else do we have? My goodness, we still have some cryptid news here for you. And one thing that we're going to talk about here is that Bigfoot story, the unfortunate Bigfoot story that actually happened last year that some people got in a little bit of trouble over, a little financial stuff here. And that's about Bigfoot and the state of New Mexico. And yeah, this is kind of, I don't know how to take this. If I'm mad about this, or I mean, not the original story, but the second part of it, it's just kind of annoying. Like, what's the point? Is my point. Now, the state of New Mexico is the only state where a publicly funded search for Bigfoot has taken place. And again, it happened back in February of 2016. If lawmakers have their way, last year's search will be the last publicly funded search for Bigfoot in the state. Again, I talked about this story. It was November 8th, 2016, episode 288, if you're going to go back in time and listen to that old archive show on paranewsinsider.com or on Podbean, pni.podbean.com. The University of New Mexico's Gallup campus held a Bigfoot conference titled Bigfoot in New Mexico, Evidence, Ecology, and Behavior. The event was coordinated by the leader of the Gallup campus, Dr. Christopher Dyer. This all sounds innocent. I mean, it's kind of cool. Nice event there about Bigfoot and how it lives. It's innocent. Unfortunately for the event, Dyer used public funding to put on the two-day event, which also included an off-site expedition. That's where he got into a little bit of trouble. All in all, it was $7,458 of public funding, and this was spent on advertising, in addition to a $1,000 honorarium plus expenses to Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and a $500 honorarium plus expenses to New Mexico naturalist Rob Kreider. And if that wasn't enough, Dyer also spent taxpayer money on the expedition, used on hotels in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, food and expenses, plus 7 pairs of snowshoes for $140. It's actually a pretty decent bargain, I think. There was actually no faculty at the event and students, so it was kind of all outside people. And that's another thing that kind of got him a little bit of trouble. All except with the exception of Dyer, of course, who even admitted that it was a fruitless expedition. The public backlash was pretty severe, and Robert Frank, the University of New Mexico president, put it simply, quote, Dr. Dyer needs to be much more thoughtful about how he undertakes these activities. The type of expedition that just took place was not appropriate and will not occur in that manner again. And that's when we take a really interesting turn with this story. It's evolving this year. But first, we'll let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, talking about squandering public money for Bigfoot research. Yes. The event took place last February, and it got in trouble later on in the year. I think it was late August, early September, and it really hit the news in November. Now, Senator George Munoz is sponsoring a bill that will ban public funds from being spent on, quote, and I quote, looking for or catching a fictitious creature, unquote. That's what it says. That's why I quoted it. The bill states in part, quote, public funds shall not be expended by a state higher educational institution for the purpose of looking for or catching a fictitious creature, including one, Bigfoot, two, Sasquatch, three, Yeti, four, abominable snowman, five, Pokemon, six, leprechauns, and seven, boogeyman, unquote. Yes, that's exactly what it says. I mean, abominable snowman? Come, I hope you realize that this creature is based in the Himalayan mountains, not in New Mexico. What are they thinking? Where are they coming up with this stuff? Well, one good positive thing here is hopefully they'll put on an event for the chupacabra, because that's still fair game, right? I mean, people have shot those things, right? Well, we'll find out. Maybe they'll have a state-funded investigation for chupacabra in New Mexico next. That's what I would do, just to spite these guys. Now, I agree it was a bit of a lapse in judgment to have used public funds for an expedition, which seems to have cost the bulk of the money. But the conference itself, I don't see the problem with that. I think it was good. It was actually, it was said to have been the most successful event that UNM has ever put on. I mean, that says something there. People want to know more. They're interested in this. And if you're bringing people to the school, what's the harm? That's what these things do. They're supposed to bring people to the event. Whether or not there was anybody there from the school, can't help you there. But I think it did its job. But again, the other part of it, I really don't agree with it. I think that was going a little bit too far. And it seems to me that from what I've read, a lot of those that are involved with this attempt to ban Bigfoot investigations from being publicly funded, they seem like they're a little offended or they're a little hurt that they weren't invited to the conference. And most of these people are skeptics who speak out against Bigfoot and related pseudoscientific pursuits. They seem like they have an agenda against this. And again, I agree. I mean, dishing out money to take people out, spending money on hotels, not smart. I just don't think that was the right thing to do. But introducing a bill to block the activities of what a school is allowed to discuss or even research, I think that's really, really wrong. I don't think that's something that political figures should be meddling with at all. At all. Keep your paws off. And if you want to read this bill, heck, you know what? I'm going to throw that in the chat room as well. It's a little PDF file. It's like two pages. It's funny. It's funny, though, to see that. Boogeyman. Yeah, Pokemon. Like, come on. It's just silly. Well, you have to cut and paste that or copy and paste that. It didn't come out right, but that's okay. You get the gist. Now we're going to move to other news. There's some other news. This is some interesting other news. And it talks about paranormal beliefs. Paranormal beliefs. What do you believe? Do you believe that places can be haunted by spirits? Do you believe that aliens have come to Earth in modern times or have visited Earth in the ancient past? Can you believe that some people move objects with their mind? Well, these are some of the questions that Chapman University, based in Orange, California, conducted a survey, and they've just released the results, and it's called the Survey of American Fears Wave 3, and all this stuff was released last October, but again, sometimes the news is a little slow. And in the survey, it examined the beliefs of common types of paranormal phenomena and also looked at the makeup of those contributing to the survey to see what makes up the average person who believes in various paranormal topics. Now, I know you've probably seen and probably heard people quote a lot of surveys over the years. I know I have. Some of them are, I don't know, a little disturbing. But this one is interesting. It's 1,500 people that were surveyed, supposedly from a cross-section of people. I don't know how much I believe that, but there wasn't a whole lot of information available about those that were interviewed. It's just them disseminating this information to us, so I don't know. Now, ranking the beliefs from highest to lowest, the highest belief percentage-wise of all these people surveyed is that places can be haunted by spirits. 46.6% of respondents agreed with the statement. So it looks like almost half the people surveyed believe that ghosts exist. It's pretty positive. The second highest belief at 39.6% is that ancient advanced civilizations such as Atlantis once existed. 39.6%. I don't know. I don't know about that one. The third highest belief was that the aliens have visited Earth in our ancient past. And that's at 27%. And I think we have Ancient Aliens and the History Channel to thank for that one, personally. Coming in next at 24.7% is that aliens have come to Earth in modern times. Okay. One way or the other. I don't know. Visitations, abductions, creepy stuff. Some people can move objects with their mind, which this would be psychokinesis, essentially. 19.1% of those surveyed felt that this was possible. Fortune tellers and psychics can see the future. Fortune tellers. They really say that anymore? I've never seen like fortune teller signs. You see psychics, but not fortune tellers. Anyway, this would merely be precognition and is just really a sample of the abilities of the varied types of psychics and mediums. And only 14.1% of those surveyed felt that this was possible, despite the large amount of money that people dish out to psychics yearly. The lowest belief of all these surveyed, number seven of seven, this is a punch in the gut to me. A tiny 13.5% of those surveyed have a belief that Bigfoot is a real creature. Wow, 13.5%. Wow. I'm going to have a t-shirt printed up that says, I'm the 13.5%. I don't know. Of these seven beliefs, it was discovered that 36% of those involved in the survey do not believe in any of these seven beliefs. 36% think that all these things are complete rubbish and they don't exist. What a nice social life you must have. 19.3% of the people believe in one of these. 13.9% believe in two of those. 9.6% believe in three. 8% believe in four. 5.9% believe in 5, and 4.3% believe in 6. And only 3.1% believe in all seven of these beliefs, which again include places can be haunted by spirits, ancient advanced civilizations such as Atlantis once existed, aliens have visited Earth in our ancient past, aliens have come to Earth in modern times, people can move objects with their mind, fortune tellers and psychics can see the future, and poor Bigfoot is a real creature. 13.5%. Wow. Also within the survey, this is an interesting part too. It kind of makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable when you hear this. There was a few personal questions asked about religion, political affiliation, marital status, income, so on and so forth. From this information, the survey found that those who believed in the paranormal tend to have a lower education, lower income, and they are religious, but do not frequently participate in services. The survey included 1,500 participants who also answered questions about other aspects of fear. Is the paranormal fears, this was just a part of the Survey of American Fears Wave 3. And the other fears included top basic fears, basic top fears, I should say, belief in conspiracies, fear of terrorism, disaster preparedness, fear of Muslims in American society, as well as the paranormal beliefs. And I'm going to throw the link out there so you can read these other surveys. It's really interesting stuff. Very interesting results. And these other surveys, I got caught up, probably spent about 2 hours just pouring through all this data. And I'll tell you, I'm going to spoil it for you. The top fear was corrupt government officials. 60.6% of those surveyed felt that corrupt government officials was the biggest thing to fear. The second one was a terrorist attack at 41%. And not having enough money for the future was third at 39.9%. Huh. And the rest of the list is it's just as interesting. And the other surveys are also worth your time to review at your leisure. I really recommend that you go through these things. Let me get that link in there. It links to everything. So this link here also links to the paranormal beliefs. It's pretty structured pretty well, and each little page will take you to all that stuff. It's really interesting stuff. It really, really, really is. And now we have, oh boy, this is a, I don't know how to take this story. This story is a little twisted. It made me hungry too. I don't know. It's really, this is probably one of those stories that I would never talk about. I would just kind of bury and I would never mention, but it was so outrageous. And there was so not that many stories that I so had to talk about this. And this stuff occasionally pops up I don't know. Are you on eBay? No? Okay. Well, some people are. And some people search for just crazy, zany stuff. And I know sometimes I sit there and I wait for some certain stuff to pop up, sports related or otherwise, and some books and things that I have at the ready. But some people... My goodness, 132 bids were placed on this particular object. 99,900 for this very unique item to sell on eBay on February 7th, a week ago. Now, the eBay seller had attempted to sell this one-of-a-kind item on three previous attempts with no one bidding. Then all of a sudden... On the fourth attempt, there was a bid of $12 that finally rolled in. It's kind of a big chunk of change for this particular object. But when I tell you, you're not going to believe this. Well, after this initial bid of $12, social media stepped in, and a link shared by a Twitter account with 86,000 plus followers, that'll usually do it for you. Well, they broadcasted the link, and that's when the bids went crazy. So what is this unique item for? What is this thing? It sold for $99,900 and no cents, 0.00. A Cheeto shaped like Harambe, the gorilla. That's right, a Cheeto. Cheetos, you know those things. They leave your fingers all orange and stuff. It was shaped like Harambe, the gorilla. You remember him. It's kind of vaguely shaped like a gorilla. I've probably eaten about 100 of these things. God, I could be a millionaire. Well, I could have been a millionaire. My goodness, I'm going to go down to the store. Hold on a minute. Buy some Cheetos. Well, no, wait. I better finish the show first. Yes, a Cheeto, vaguely shaped like a gorilla, went for $99,900 and no cents. Again, Harambe, if you don't remember this, I don't know how... Maybe you've seen the memes, but you don't know what it's for. I don't know. Well, he got worldwide attention last year. This gorilla was unfortunately, sadly, shot and killed. Very, very controversial topic here. A little boy fell into the enclosure at the Cincinnati Zoo last year, and Harambe was unfortunately shot. They felt that it was the right thing to do. people are on both sides of the fence. I'm kind of like in the middle of the fence. And I don't want to fall over into the enclosure either, but I'm on the middle of the fence with this one still to this day. Social media, however, they went nuts. And if it's not crazy enough about this Cheeto-shaped thing, there's another one, another Cheeto-shaped like Harambe that's fetching over $75,000. I got to find some snacks. I got to go to the couch. To top it off, this is when it gets really outrageous. You think this is ridiculous. You think this is funny. It's not funny. To top it off, a screenshot, the original Harambe Cheeto auction taken with just 1 second left for bidding, a screenshot is going for $10,000. It hurts my brain. My brain hurts just thinking about this stuff. In 2009, you may not know this. This according to Cheeto mythology. 2009, a Cheeto in the shape of Michael Jackson doing the moonwalk sold for a paltry $35.18. And people thought that was crazy. Now others, of course, are jumping on the bandwagon and are selling all sorts of odd-shaped Cheetos and other food for ridiculous prices, other than a handful of other Cheeto-shaped like Harambe doing odd things, which I won't mention. A Superman-shaped Cheeto is going for about $5,000, and a President Donald Trump Cheeto sold for $12.99. And I think, from what I saw in there, I think Frank Lee bid on that as well, but he didn't win. $99,900 and no cents for a Cheeto. Well, that definitely does not make any sense. And according to this the story, Chester Cheetah could not be reached for comment. I'm definitely doing something wrong. I'm clearing the shelf tomorrow. I'm buying every bag. I mean, if I buy 100 bags, I make $100,000. I mean, it's pretty good. All right, enough ridiculousness. Let's get some serious stuff here. Let's talk some serious stuff. Now, last week, if you remember, I talked about how NASA was researching the correlation of solar storms and mass strandings of animals. You might have heard, probably heard about this. This is pretty big news about the large stranding of pilot whales in New Zealand. This has been a kind of a sad situation that's gone on over the weekend. Last weekend, a lot of people involved, and it's been some pretty. Now, over 650 pilot whales beached themselves last Friday in two separate stranding events. Of those 650, about 350 had died, and many were dead before rescuers could come to help. About 100 whales were pushed back out to sea, but about 240 whales remained ashore Saturday night when rescuers left for the night. They kind of felt for the worst, 240 whales. They figured they would come back to 240 dead whales and hopefully no more strandings. But they were pretty surprised. Herb Christophers, a spokesman for New Zealand's Department of Conservation, stated, quote, "We had 240 whales stranded yesterday in the afternoon, and we were fearful we were going to end up with 240 dead whales this morning. The amazing thing is when the rescuers returned the next morning, over 200 whales were gone and only 17 remained," unquote. Project Jonah New Zealand tweeted that the other 17 whales eventually joined the pod of previously released whales, as well as the ones that got out on their own, I guess. And they were all a few kilometers. I haven't heard any updates today on this. I don't think I even looked, to be honest. I'm going to be honest with you. Business. But still a good thing that I'm kind of on the fence. Because like I said before, I don't like when we meddle with stuff. When we start meddling with nature, that's when things happen. But it's good that we save these pilot whales. I'm a big fan of whales myself. I've never seen a pilot whale, personally. But 2015, actually, let me go to 2012. I was out in the San Juan Islands in Washington State off the coast, northwest, toward Victoria, British Columbia, looking for whales, and we saw nothing. We saw – actually, we saw a it was a right whale, or – I don't think it was a humpback. Or it was a minke. I'm sorry. It was a minke whale. And we were very disappointed because this is one of the best locations in the world to see orca. And we went back 2 years later, 2014, and oh my goodness, we saw every single one of the orca that are – there's essentially two types. You have the transients that come and go, and you have the residents that live there all year round. And we were able to see every single pod, the three pods of all the resident whales, and they were all around us. And it was very emotional, and it was just awe-inspiring to see all these whales around you and hear them breathing in and out, and to see them moving around and just being free and being out there. So I have an appreciation for this story, and really. Kind of, I am happy that, that we were able to save these. Well, not we. I wasn't there. I would have gone down there. If it was Lake Erie, it'd be kind of weird to see pilot whales in Lake Erie. But that they did this and they freed these whales and they're alive. And hopefully this doesn't happen again. Now, does this have anything to do with, you know, what we talked about before about solar storms? Anything? Probably not. Now there's still a lot of speculation. People are asking. They're wondering. Well, why did this thing happen? Why did all these pilot whales beach themselves? What's going on? Well, it should be noted that this beach has been the sighting of many other mass strandings, not just pilot whales, but other animals too. So they're looking at it as there's a, it's a shallow beach and potential combination of a lot of other factors. Maybe they were chasing prey or whatever. And unfortunately, they just landed up on this beach. And I think part of that shows that since these 200 other whales eventually moved off on their own, it wasn't something that they were trying to do themselves. I think there's a little bit more to that. I don't think it was solar storms, but I do look forward to NASA's report. I wonder what they're going to find with that particular thing as well. It's interesting. And I don't think I put that link in the chat room. Let me quickly put that link chat room here. It's actually from NPR News. NPR. And I'm going to put that in there. Yeah, I also got to see, you probably didn't know this. Maybe you did. I don't know. The it's an orca whale called Grant. And she just passed away. Well, they think she passed away. And because she hasn't been seen. And she's the matriarch of the family. And she's thought to have been 105 years at the time of her disappearance and ultimate, more than likely, being passed. Well, it's really weird because it was a little overwhelming when we saw all these pods together. Couldn't really pick out what was what. We were actually on board with a naturalist, Jeannie Hyde, who she's been part of the great documentation of these whales. They all have names. They name all them, and they know by their saddle patches and their dorsal fin, different markings. They know exactly who is who. And you can – it's amazing. They can just look at these whales and poof, they can name the names. They can name who they are. They can identify them. And they kind of all look the same to me when I was out there. But we learned a little bit about them. We've been to a museum there and – got to know who these whales were, and it was amazing because the last orca that I saw, that my wife and I, Amy, saw before we left our last time in 2014, there was three whales that swam by, and the last one that we saw was Granny, and I got to get her picture, and that was pretty cool to see her, and it was kind of like she was saying goodbye, and that was an awesome week to connect with nature and a beautiful, beautiful place. Hopefully one of these days I can move out there. It's beautiful out there. And it's not like Seattle. It doesn't rain all the time. It's actually in what they call a rain shadow, so you don't get as much rain. It's pretty cool out there, though. Yeah, and if you like whales, that's the place to go. Humpback's making a comeback out there and all sorts of stuff. So that's your news this week. I know it's not paranormal, but it's tied into last week's story. And it's about animals. It's about the earth. You know, we should talk about the earth. We all live here, right? And there's some weird stuff happening on earth all the time. And it's all interconnected. It's all connected. So if you've not checked out the events page, check out the events page. Paranewsinsider.com/events, or just click on the tab at the top at paranewsinsider.com. There's a lot of stuff coming up. I think February is done for the ghost events. Let me see here. Yes. The next one is in March. Para-Americon 2017 in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I don't think I'm going to make that one. Gift of Light Expo, March 11th through the 12th, Columbus, Ohio. And a bunch of other stuff here. There's one in Texas, another Pennsylvania one, one in Oregon. Check it out. You're going to want to you're going to want to see this stuff. UFO events this weekend. It's a pretty big one. The International UFO Congress probably will have something from this event. I've got a funny feeling that something is going to be discussed at the International UFO Congress that I will be talking about next week. I don't know what. I haven't heard anything. I just I have a feeling, kind of a gut instinct here, that something is going to be said. Something is going to be disclosed at the International UFO Congress. So stay tuned next week. I think there's going to be something from that event. Next week's Paranormal News on the 21st might have something to do with that. I don't know. We'll find out. Cryptozoology this coming weekend, February 17th to the 18th, Hastings, Nebraska, the first annual Nebraska Bigfoot Conference. They should have one in South Dakota. You get it? South Dakota? I don't know. You weren't paying attention, I guess. After that, the next one on that calendar, my goodness, 2017 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. I won't talk about that anymore. But anyway, check out this list of events. It's ever expanding. It's getting longer. Got a couple more I think I got to add. I have a couple of emails came in. And do appreciate all of you that have submitted events or have reminded me about stuff that I forgot to add, because there was websites not in place yet. And I didn't want to add an event without any way of getting a hold of these events. So I kind of held off on putting anything together for that. But once the link was active, I forgot. Thank you for reminding me. But a lot of people are asking me or telling me about their different events or asking me about different stuff. Can I put it on the website? Well, yes and no. I mean, obviously, I do talk about, anything that's ongoing, I probably won't list. But most of the stuff, classes, tours, guided hunts, it's usually a one-off. It's a one-time event, because I don't want to start listing all these places that do weekly or monthly tours, guided hunts, and stuff like that, because there's so many little groups that do that. I kind of want to avoid that and focus on these smaller ones, these that really non-business type ones that are just trying to get people together and get people to understand what's going on out there in the paranormal. I like that stuff. Let's see, I lost my place here. Yeah. Paranormal conferences, conventions. I said this before. Some people are, they like them. They think they're great. Some people are like, it's a complete waste of money and time. Sometimes they are, but you're going to meet great people. It's not about going and seeing these people that are on TV. Maybe it is for you, but a lot of these are just, they do it, get those people to get people to buy tickets, but it's about the people that are there. It's about networking. It's about learning new things. I say this all the time, but I really mean it, because that's what I go to these things for. I go there not just to speak, which is fun. It's exciting to sell a couple of books, but I also go there to learn from other people, and I look forward to that, and I hope you do too, and I hope you get out there sometime this year. So again, paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab. at the top and check them out. Get out there. Get out there somewhere. Read a book, too. I don't know. You can buy a lot of books at these events, too. So that's a great opportunity as well to meet authors and get their take on stuff and get their signature, get their little autograph on that. And with that, I want to thank Cindy, my producer, for all the hard work she does for this, not just the show, but the network. Thank you for Paul for filling in for Dita while she shovels out of her little corner of the world up there in the Great White North. Thanks, Paul, for filling in for her. And for everybody showing up in the chat room, I appreciate it. Anybody listening to the show, live or otherwise, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I know you're listening because I keep track of that stuff. And it makes me feel good to know that people are actually listening to me babble for an hour and 1 minute. So anyway, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.